Good evening. My name is Musho, also known as Rodney Allen Greenblatt, and I'm a senior student here at the wonderful Village Zendo. We have quite a few newcomers, people returning to their practice tonight. Of course, I forgot that January is a time when we try to make changes in our lives and in our patterns, so welcome to the newcomers. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to our regulars. We have a few around. And thank you to all those who will be listening to this recording out there in the world. Maybe even more than 10 people will listen to this talk sometime in the future. Who knows? Happy New Year. Welcome to the year 2016. Since my last Dharma talk, which was in mid-November, I've had some changes in my life. First of all, I've become a grandfather. Isn't that great? I have a little granddaughter who is about 6 weeks old, I think. Her name is Lupa, and she lives, unfortunately, in Eugene, Oregon, which is very, very far away. I haven't seen my grandchild yet except on tons of iPhone pictures. I will go out to see her in a few weeks, but maybe at the end, if there's nothing else to do, I could show you some baby pictures. They're very cute. Of course, my grandchild is the cutest and most intelligent baby. At least it seems that way. Also, I have been given the job here at the Village Zendo of being the executive director. Isn't that interesting? And I'm going to say a few words about that. This is a big shift for me. I've been coming to the Zendo for 8 years, and I've done many jobs and liturgy positions and programming and working hard, as many volunteers here at the Zendo do work. But I wanted to say that this is an honor. And if you know anything about traditional Japanese temples, there actually is a teaching wing and an administrative wing. They're two different buildings, I think, usually traditionally. Of course, here we don't have any wings. We just have this one room. But that's okay. We don't have wings, but we do have teachers and we do have administrators. Hiroshi Enkyo O'Hara is our leader, and she leads the teachers. And I've been asked to lead the administrators. But who are the administrators? Actually, all the teachers are administrators. And everyone who helps out here at the Zendo, everyone who volunteers, they're administrators too. So really, we're all working together to do the administrative work here at the Zendo. I think there's a common urge for people who have the title of executive director to create some sort of vision or a strategy or some kind of like mission statement. I think that's probably a habit of newly entering executive directors. But I work for a Zen temple. So for the last 1,000 years, we've had the same mission, to inspire enlightenment. Or, as we would put it here in our contemporary practice at the Village Zendo, to open people to their own enlightened nature. Then we even have a time-tested four-point strategy for doing this. So now imagine a PowerPoint slide behind me. And those 4 points are, number one, save all sentient beings. Number two, put an end to desires. Three, master all dharmas. And four, attain the Buddha way. That's our basic plan. On top of that, what kind of visions and strategy could I possibly come up with? Well, I have been working on a diluted vision for the Zendo. I would like it to stay the same. I don't want it to change. I want the Zendo to stay exactly like it is forever. For many years now, we basically break even financially. We gain a few new members annually. The doors open 3 times a day. The teachers give wonderful talks, and the students learn. The space is just the right size. Our meditation periods are quiet, exactly as they should be. No change is needed. My diluted vision for the Zendo is to keep it going exactly like it is for the next 1,000 years. But, as we know, this is impossible. Shakyamuni Buddha and all successive Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and all the Zen masters who live in huts on mountaintops or they might be sitting in caves are telling me, Musho, everything changes. Nothing stays the same. Impermanence is the rule, and the desire to hold on to anything, to cling to anything, is going to lead to suffering. Even though they keep telling me this, I don't listen. I want to hold on to things. People, places, good times. I want to carry the magical past with me, and I want to pretend. I'm sorry to say my no-change policy will not work. Even the Zendo will have to change. If I really want the Zendo to prosper as it is, then I have to let go of the Zendo as it is. I have to see it as constantly changing, and I will need all of your help to do that. It's not easy to let go of the things that you want to happen and to let go of the things the way you want them to be. Often when a leader of an institution or organization realizes impermanence, and very few of them do, but when they do, he or she may propose innovative changes. Commonly when this happens, the administrators, managers, workers, members, customers, whoever they are, they all become alarmed. Sometimes they panic. And there's usually a pushback to change. It's totally natural. Change is hard. I think that if the leader really has realized impermanence, then he or she will understand and help those who naturally resist change. And in order to do that, there has to be a dialogue. The people who propose the changes and the people who will be affected by the changes have to work together. Otherwise, it can be very painful. I was thinking about the politicians on TV. It's so easy to propose change. It's so easy to talk about it. But to really get people to change is difficult. It's hard work. And it really takes, as I said, a dialogue between people. So, we're going to work together. And we're going to help each other realize impermanence and not panic so much. We're so lucky here at the Village Zendo because we study Zen and we do meditation. We have great teachers. And we can be okay with change. We can navigate. And we can even rest in the endless flow of everything changing. This is the first talk given since our year-end retreat. We have a retreat every year. It starts on December 26th and it ends on January 1st. And we celebrate New Year's together. It's really a lot of fun. It was our third year at the Garrison Institute in Garrison, New York. It's about an hour and a half from here. You can take the train to the town of Garrison, and it's not far from the train station. It's an amazing place. It was a great big Christian monastery. It looks ancient, like medieval or something, but I think it was built in like the tens, built in the 20s. In the 50s, it was built in the 1950s? Wow. It looks really ancient, but apparently it was built in the 1950s. And I'm not sure what happened, but the Christian monks are long gone, and it's been taken over by a kind of a Tibetan Buddhist organization, and they run it and rent it out. And it is a tremendous space. It has a huge cathedral that we set up like a Zen monastery with two rows of cushions. And we have, I think we had 80 people. And I think we had 90 people. We've had 90 people there before. So it's an amazing experience. We sit Zazen for five hours a day, along with walking meditation. And we hear a Dharma talk every day. And we do three chanting services before each meal. The food is excellent. The rooms are simple, modest, as you would expect a monk's room, but they're nice. They're very nice. And I have to mention the bathrooms, and though they're communal bathrooms, they're very clean, and they've been renovated recently. So it's very comfortable. And the shower water was hot. Very nice. So there's that. It's a good place. I really recommend it. So for the new people, and maybe if you haven't been on our retreat, you might wonder like what it's like to meditate for 5 hours a day for 5 days. And of course, I can only tell you my own experience. Everyone is going to have a different experience and a different reaction. And a different, it will be different depending on if you've ever done a retreat like that before or if you've done 5 or 10 of them before. It's always going to be different. But I thought I'd give you my view, what happens to Musho on these retreats. So the first day, when I get there, I'm really excited. And I work really hard to like set up and really get into the meditation right away. And then I become completely exhausted. And the second day, I get up and I get to the Zendo. And I usually have some kind of like sinus condition or some other problem, like some like physical malady all of a sudden appears. And then I start thinking there's something wrong with the cushion or my legs. That's the second day. Then by the end of the third day, I basically lose my mind. I start either laughing silently to myself or crying, tears rolling down. It always happens on the third day. The fourth day, I feel like I actually start doing meditation by then. I sort of settle in and I'm just doing my meditation. And then the fifth day, I really start to appreciate my life. I really start to see how really great it is. And then I want to go home and really get into doing what I do. That's sort of how it plays out for me. It's going to be different for you. And I really hope you can attend one of our retreats. Our year end winter retreat is only a week, but in the summer we actually have a 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 4 weeks of retreat, a little bit more, and you can come for as much of it as you want. In the beginning, we'll have a session, which will be a probably 7 day intensive like this, like I'm describing. Then we have a couple of weeks of study. And also a week for the people who want to take Jukai and accept the precepts. And then finally we have another session, usually for 5 days at the end. So if you have some time this summer, it all happens in August, mostly end of July and August, please come. It's a great experience. Every year at our retreat, we have a study text. And this year, our study text is a wonderful book. It's appearing right here, called The Hidden Lamp. Here it is. This book was suggested by our practice leader. So every time we have a retreat, we have one person who has been practicing a while, and the teacher decides kind of we'll go to the next step. And that person will be asked to be the practice leader. And the practice leader will suggest things about the practice and also take care of the Sangha as we gather on the retreat. So this year it's Fusho Traven Rice. She's not here tonight. And she took care of all of us at the winter retreat. And I think she had suggested this book to Roshi. Roshi, I think, usually picks the study text. But this is the book that we're using. And this is the perfect book for this particular process, and I'll explain why. I think that Fusho chose it because here at the Zendo we've been studying diversity, and we've been looking at why different groups of people are segregated and oppressed. We've been looking at those issues, and we've had several workshops. We've been looking with clarity, trying to look with clarity at gender, race, and ability. So this book, The Hidden Lamp, is a collection of commentaries. And it's all written by contemporary female Zen teachers, which points to the unfortunate history of the suppression of women's voices in our long history of male-dominated Zen. The traditional old Zen was always a patriarchy. But there were women always there, wise women, creating stories in the old days and also in the new days. This book contains so much wisdom and insight, and it also, as well as commentaries by teachers we know, and it contains commentaries by our own abbot, Enkyo Roshi, and also by Joshin Sensei, our co-founder. If you study Zen, or if you know anything about the contemporary Zen world, there are many teachers whose names you'll be familiar with in this book, and quite a few of the teachers who have visited us and given Dharma talks here at the Zendo, including Beth Kanji Goldring, Merle Kodo Boyd, Myoan Grace Shireson. And this fall, we'll have a workshop, coming this fall in September, we'll have a workshop with Zenju Earthlin Manuel, another one of the teachers who's written essays in this book. And that's going to be really nice. So if you ever have to give a Dharma talk, this book is like a dream come true. The stories are traditional stories, but they're unusual because they've been discovered over many years by very experienced teachers. And the commentaries are contemporary. Like some of the commentaries we read on the older texts were also written a long time ago. So you have to kind of do a commentary on the commentaries to sort of figure out what some of these things are. But this book is tremendous because they're all contemporary commentaries on traditional Buddhist stories. And also modern Buddhist stories too. Anyway, it's all very thoughtful and it's very alive. So if you're a Dharma talker like me, all you have to do is read the stories and then be inspired by the great commentaries and then make a meager additional comment to yourself. It's very easy. So that's what I'm doing here tonight. The story in The Hidden Lamp that I want to bring up today has a wonderful comment by Roshi Merle Kodo Boyd, who spoke here at the Zendo at our Color of the Self workshop. The story she has chosen is called Chiyono's No Water, No Moon. And I'm going to read it to you. This story is from Japan in the 13th century. Chiyono was a servant in a Zen convent who wanted to practice Zazen. One day she approached an elderly nun and asked, "I'm of humble birth. I can't read or write and must work all the time. Is there any possibility that I could attain the way of Buddha even though I have no skills?" The nun answered her, "This is wonderful, my dear. In Buddhism, there is no distinctions between people. There is only this. Each person must hold fast to the desire to awaken and cultivate a heart of great compassion. People are complete as they are. If you don't fall into delusive thoughts, there is no Buddha and no sentient beings. There is only one complete nature. If you want to know your true nature, you need to turn toward the source of your delusive thoughts. This is called Zazen." Chiyono said with happiness, "With this practice as my companion, I only have to go about my daily life, practicing day and night." After months of wholehearted practice, She went out on a full moon night to draw some water from the well. The bottom of her old bucket, held together by bamboo strips, suddenly gave way, and the reflection of the moon vanished with the water. When she saw this, she attained great realization. Her enlightenment poem was this. With this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together, and then the bottom fell out. Where the water does not collect, the moon does not dwell. Isn't that great? It's a great story. Kodo Roshi sees the bucket as a place of constant tension, where the image of ourselves and our desires to fit in are carried around. Our desires to fit in, carried around in the bucket. We keep patching and upgrading the bucket to maintain who we think we are. And as Roshi Kodo puts it, keeping it all together. It's hard work, keeping it all together. When the bucket finally breaks, the exhaustion of maintaining the self and adhering to our conditioning is gone. Although she says keeping it together is also a valuable skill, she sees our Zen practice as a place between patched bucket and bottomless bucket. She writes, "Moving between patched bucket and bottomless bucket, I can exercise my freedom to keep things together or let things come apart according to the circumstances. I have come to trust the true freedom of living where the moon does not dwell." It's great. I agree with Kodo Roshi, and I deeply want to understand her teaching. In my own deluded wisdom, I'm constantly admiring or envying the reflection of the moon. The future and the past are merely transient images in the bucket water. For me, the bucket is just not full of reflections, but is full of all kinds of material possessions. Many of you know, or a few of you might happen to know, that my wife and I are in the process of moving our home of over 28 years, actually. And during those 28 years, I collected things. I collected art supplies. I'm an artist. I collected a lot of art supplies, objects for sculpture projects, equipment, as well as what I think might be an unusually large collection of clothing, books, furniture, hobby items. I feel like the bottom of the bucket is straining and cracking. I'm reducing the strain by getting rid of a lot of stuff, yet I'm still keeping the bucket patched and intact. The bucket is holding the images I created of myself in the past and the assorted images I have of what I'll be in the future and all the items that seem to be necessary to do this, right? So you see yourself, maybe what you think you should be doing in the future, and you think, well, I'll need this and this in order to do that. I'm really good at that kind of thing, and I've collected a lot of stuff. I keep asking myself, what am I going to do? Will I need this? It's really hard to say. On the retreat, I spent a lot of my meditation time pondering this, and as usual, berating myself for my excesses of the past, and planning some kind of improbable, austere future, right? Where I wouldn't have anything. Just like a blank room with a cushion and three bowls or something like that. That's not going to happen. But this is just like the woman in the koan, Chiono. It's like seeing herself as unable and unqualified, right? That's how she saw herself. But luckily, and just as Chiono was inspired by a wise teacher, I've also been guided and inspired by our teachers here. On the winter retreat, I had time to see through the reflections in the bucket and also allow them to be there at the same time. Letting go of the berating and of the planning even temporarily, was a great benefit. And it really turned out to be kind of an act of kindness for myself. To end my talk tonight, I've written a short blessing based on all of the things that I've learned in the past few months. May you realize all things change and care for our natural desire to resist it. May you go on a long Zen retreat and give yourself a break from keeping it together. May the attractive reflection of the moon in the bucket water be revealed for what it is. And if you're open, may the bottom of the bucket fall out. No water, no moon. Thank you.